Hey, this is Brian Zond, and I'm glad that you're interested in the podcast. You know, it's a free podcast, and it'll always be that way. But if you would like to give and help us out, that would be awesome, deeply appreciated. If you want to do that, you can do that through the Word of Life website or through the Word of Life mobile app. Anyway, God bless you. I hope you enjoy the podcast. We're beginning a new series today. A summertime series. It'll be for June and July, and then it's Finding God on your iPod, because that's what we do around here at Word of Life. Once we get to July 31st, we're going to start it one day early, and then all through August. I've already got my songs picked out, so no sense lobbying me for something. I've already got them picked out. It's a closely guarded secret, but it's going to be good. But we're beginning a series today that will go for 8 Sundays, June and July, entitled Stories of Redemption. And this is one of the ways of understanding the Bible. The Bible is one big story of redemption made up with lots of little stories of redemption that carry the narrative forward throughout the whole story. And by redemption, I guess I mean rescue. I mean finding forgiveness, finding home, finding acceptance, finding belonging. That kind of phenomenon is what we mean by redemption. And we're going to be looking at those over the next 8 Sundays, 8 stories. So each one's a story, too. It's not just sermons on redemption, stories of redemption. And so we're going to look at 8 stories of the saving work of God. Some from the Old Testament, some from the New Testament, some from contemporary life, and I might even draw some from the arts, like film and maybe some novels. We'll see how that works out. But today we're beginning with our first one, and it's entitled Ruth, A Love Story. Ruth, A Love Story. My text is Ruth, chapter 3, verse 9. Boaz said to Ruth, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your bread in the wine." So here's what we're going to do. You're going to hear Ruth's story of redemption, and then you're going to come here and eat some bread and dip your bread in the wine, and it's going to be part of your own redemption story. Now, the book of Ruth is a little short vignette stuck there between Judges and Samuel. From Genesis through Judges, the Bible is dominated by larger-than-life characters. Noah and his ark, and Abraham, the father of faith, and Jacob and his 12 sons and the ladder that reaches to heaven and wrestling with the angel and all of that. And then there's Joseph and his coat of many colors becoming prime minister of Egypt, and Joshua and the walls come down, and Samson and Gideon and their various exploits. These are the heroes of Israel. And all of these heroes of faith experienced miracles and were marked by, in some way or another, greatness. But at last, with the book of Ruth, we meet some ordinary people. We meet some people not like Moses, but more like us. And so in the story of Ruth, there are no miracles, there are no angels, no tales of derring do. No one parts a sea or stops the sun. Yet God is very present in Ruth's story. At work, as God usually is, quietly but faithfully behind the scenes. Interestingly, Ruth is the only book in the Bible where women do more of the talking than men. Sometimes we make, you know, little jokes about women always talking, but in the Bible it's the men that won't shut up. So Ruth gives us a little bit different perspective, and I think for that reason alone it's kind of important. And Ruth does bring us a kind of different perspective on understanding God's work of redemption. Well, the story of Ruth begins by telling us that there was a famine in the land. That is an economic crisis. Let's use some contemporary language. There was an economic crisis. And of course, economic recessions and depressions always hit ordinary people the hardest. And so, that's the background for Ruth a love story. Once upon a time, there was a man, an Israelite of the tribe of Judah, who lived in Bethlehem. This is before Bethlehem has any notoriety at all. And this Israelite, this man from the tribe of Judah living in Bethlehem, he had a wife, and her name was Naomi. And this man and his wife Naomi, they had two sons. They were just about at marrying age. They were mostly grown. And that's when the economic crisis hit. And it hit this family particularly hard. In fact, so much so that they lost their home, they lost their land, they lost their property. They were indebted, and the creditor seized it. The bank foreclosed, and they lost their home. They lost their source of livelihood. And so this family from Bethlehem moved to Moab, trying to find work, trying to find opportunity. They left the land of Israel and moved to the land of Moab because they heard that there was some economic opportunities there. Not long after they arrive in the land of Moab, these two sons that Naomi and her husband had are married to Moabite women. They got married just right off the bat as soon as they got in Moab. One married a Moab woman by the name of Orpah. The other married a Moabite woman by the name of Ruth. But not long after that, the husband died, just suddenly died. And now Naomi is a widow living in Moab with her two sons and now two daughters-in-law. And that was all right for 10 years, but after 10 years of living there in Moab, suddenly her two sons die. I don't know if it was some sort of epidemic, some plague, some disease. I don't know what happened. But those two sons died. 10 years gone, just like that. And Naomi has lost everything. She's lost her home. She's lost her husband. And she's lost her two sons. There's nothing for her to do now but to go back home. There's not much there. She'd left because there wasn't much there. But it's better than being a childless widow in Moab, and so she decides that she will go back home to Bethlehem. Her daughters-in-law, who are now also widows, Orpah and Ruth, they decide that they will go with their mother-in-law and seek their fortune in Bethlehem. And so they all set out on the road one day, Naomi and Orpah and Ruth, to go back to Bethlehem. But while they're on the road, suddenly Naomi thinks, what am I doing? And she just stops. She stops her two daughters-in-law and she says, look, I know that you love me. And you've been wonderful to me. And I thank you for it. But there's no sense in sticking with me. I don't have anything to offer. I'm going back to nothing. I don't have other sons for you to marry. If we were to just dream wildly, and if I were to be married today and pregnant tonight, would you wait for these sons to grow up so you could marry them? No, I have nothing to offer you. Go back to your home in Moab. And they stood there in the road and they wept together. It's a very tender sight. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and went back to Moab. But Ruth wouldn't leave. She's sobbing, she's crying, and she's clinging to Naomi, and she won't leave. And she spoke these famous words, where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. And so Ruth sticks with her mother-in-law, Naomi. They're both widows. They're both poor. They have no prospects, but Ruth stays with Naomi, and they make the journey back to Bethlehem. Naomi hasn't been there for 10 years. But it's her village, and it's just a tiny village, you understand. And it has no notoriety. It's not known at all. Just a little village, 5 miles south of Jerusalem. But when she gets back, people immediately recognize her. Oh, I mean, they haven't seen her for 10 years. She's got more lines in her face now, but they recognize her. And they say, oh, it's Naomi. And she says, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Don't call me Naomi. That's not an appropriate name for me anymore. We should change my name. It should be Mara. Because Naomi means pleasant. Mara means suffering. She said, I haven't had a pleasant life. It's been suffering. I left here full. At least I had a full family. And now I've come back empty. And so now, Naomi, she's in her 50s. Ruth, she's in her 20s. They occupy the lowest rung in society. The last, the very bottom rung of the socioeconomic structure. They are impoverished widows. And Ruth is a foreigner. What they need, what they really need, what they need most is help. Well, we could say it this way. They need redemption. They need rescue. They need what the Bible often calls justice. The way modern Americans think about the word when you hear the word justice and the way the Bible uses the word are two different things, and that'll help you to know that. In America, we have been cultured to think almost entirely in terms of retributive, punitive, criminal justice, punishment. That is not hardly at all how the Bible uses the word. The Bible uses the word justice in setting things right. So what do poor widows, without any real possibility of making a living, what do they need? They need things to be set right for them. They need some justice. And fortunately, in the land of Israel, they are being shaped by the law of God, the Torah. And the Torah is intensely concerned about things like this. It's what most of the Torah is about, in fact. And so, for example, there was a law in Israel. They don't have it in Moab, but they have it in Israel. There is a law that when you are harvesting your field, you cannot harvest it all. By law, you have to leave some of the corners. You have to leave some so that the poor, people like Naomi and Ruth, can come and glean in the fields and they can get some grain that they can both eat and sell and eke out a living. It's the law. There were all kinds of interesting details to that law. For example, if you had your bundled sheaves upon the wagon and then they fell off, by law, you could not pick them up. You had to leave them. So that's for the poor. It fell off. It must be an act of providence. It must have been the hand of God knocked that off. That's for the poor. In other words, Israel is being shaped in a way of thinking that God has a deep concern for the poor and it doesn't all belong to you. You say, well, that's my field. God says, no, it's my field. You're just farming my field. It's not your field, and it doesn't all belong to you. And we are going to have into our legal code structures that make it possible for the poor to be cared for. This is in the Bible. And so, at harvest time, and it happens to be harvest time in our story, the poor were allowed to glean in the field. But this was dangerous for women, though. I mean, just because you have these laws doesn't mean that everything turns out okay. It was dangerous for women to be out there with the field hands. Sometimes they would be harassed and worse. And it would be especially dangerous for a foreigner, and especially for a Moabite foreigner. And there's a reason for that, and we'll get to that momentarily. So here we are in our story. We're back in Bethlehem. Naomi and Ruth, both widows. Ruth's a foreigner. Naomi's really too old to be working in the fields. And so it falls to Ruth to be the one to take advantage of this law and to go glean in the fields. But Naomi says, well, I'll tell you where to start. You just go down the road here, and there is a cousin of my late husband. And since we have some kind of connection, maybe that would be a good place for you to go glean. And so Ruth goes to the field of a relative of her late husband. His name was Boaz. He had several fields, and it was the barley crop, and it was the time for the barley harvest. And so Ruth, I'm sure with great trepidation, and she's shy, and she doesn't really belong there, and she's a foreigner. But she's there, and she goes into the field, and she begins to find the little bits that haven't been harvested, and she gleans. Now, while this is happening, while Ruth, the Moabite, is gleaning in the field of Boaz, she catches the eye of old Boaz. And Boaz thinks, it's pretty fine. And he asks some of his workers, who's that young woman there? They said, well, that's a Moabite woman. Remember Naomi? Yeah. Well, that Moabite woman was married to her son, but he died and they've come back. Oh, okay. I keep using this word Moabite. I keep stressing it because you see there's a backstory. I haven't told you that yet. The Moabites weren't just another Canaanite people. They were particularly odious to the Israelites because of an incident that happened at the Acacia Grove during the time that Israel was migrating from Egypt into the land of Canaan. There was this episode by the Acacia Grove where it depends on how you read the story, but it looks like a number of Moabite prostitutes came to the camp. As the men tell the story, they were seduced, just probably overwhelmed, couldn't control themselves, and ended up worshiping Moabite gods, particularly Baal of Peor. And this created a terrible scandal, and people were hurt, and there was judgment, and bad things happened. And because of that, there was now worked into the law, into the Torah. Now we have this sanction. Moabites are permanently excluded from any participation in Israelite society. They cannot belong to the congregation of Israel anyway. No Moabites. And yet Boaz has got a Moabite woman gleaning in his field. He's been told it's a Moabite. You have to know the rules well so you will know how to break them properly. That story, by the way, that principle, you have to know the rules well so you will know how to break them properly, works all the way through the Bible. And if you don't like that, neither did the Pharisees. But Jesus knew the rules well and knew how to break them properly. Well, anyway, Boaz now goes over and he approaches Ruth. And he says to her, hello, I'm Boaz. I'm the owner of this field. And I just want you to know you're welcome to glean here. In fact, I've got some other fields. I've got one to the north and then a third one over to the east. And I think what you ought to do is you ought to just stick with me. Just glean in my fields. And I'm going to tell all my farmhands, I'm going to tell everyone not to hassle you, so nobody's going to give you a hard time. You're welcome in my fields during this barley harvest. And my servants will be hauling water from the well and bringing them out here in pots, and you are free to drink from our water. I just want you to know you're welcome. Of course, Ruth is very touched by this, and she bows deeply to Boaz, and she tells him how she's just so thankful, but also kind of surprised that an Israelite man would show this kind of kindness to a foreigner, to a Moabite. And Boaz said this, "May the God of Israel bless you, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Wonderful words. Now here's a woman that, according to the Torah, can have no participation in Israelite society. But she's there anyway. And Boaz lets her stay. Says, "You're welcome here." And when she expresses some surprise at this kindness, he responds by saying, "May the God of Israel bless you," not exclude you, not throw you out. "May the God of Israel bless you, under whose wings you have come to take," under whose wings, the word also means blanket, "under whose wings or blanket you have come to take refuge. Indeed, you have to know the rules well so you will know how to break them properly." At lunchtime, they're taking their lunch break, you know, all the workers, and Ruth, who's gleaning. At lunchtime, Boaz kind of motions to Ruth, and he says, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your bread in the wine." Oh, no, it's impossible. It's totally impossible to be a Christian, read that, and not think he's going all Jesus. Like, I mean, 1,000 years too soon. I mean, what's he going to say next? "Come unto me, all you that are weary and heavy laden"? But hey, it's a prefiguring of Jesus. I mean, the bread and wine, come on, it's obvious, isn't it? Boaz has got his blanket out there. Noontime lunch break. He's sitting on his blanket. He sees Ruth. Truth is, he hasn't taken his eye off her all day. And he says, "Well, come over here. Come sit with me. Take some bread and dip it in the wine." After lunch, she goes, the workers are getting ready to go back. Ruth gets up. She leaves. She's going back now to the field. And Boaz gathers his workers around and says, "Look, guys, I want to make sure that some of the bundled sheaves that you've already bundled and put on the wagon, I want to make sure some of them fall off. And of course, you know the law, that you can't pick it up. So you guys are going to do some shoddy work this afternoon. You're going to be clumsy as heck. I mean, stuff's just going to be falling off the wagon right and left. Get my drift?" They said, "We got you, boss." And so, Ruth has a profitable day gleaning in the field of Boaz, and she goes home that evening, and she tells Naomi about her day. And she says, "Now, what's the name of this guy? Boaz." "Yeah, Boaz. All right. Well, you just stay with Boaz. I think this is going to work out maybe all right. You just stay with Boaz." And so Ruth kept going to the fields of Boaz for about a week until it was the end of the harvest of the barley. And then Naomi, the mother-in-law, comes to her widowed daughter-in-law, Ruth, and says, "Got to talk to you. You've got all the harvest in?" "Yeah, yeah." "Well, tonight Boaz will thresh the barley in his barn. And so here's what you're going to do. Get all cleaned up. Put on some perfume. Get your prettiest dress. And you're going to go to his barn. But you're going to do it secretly. Don't let anybody see you. Don't let Boaz see you. And he'll be threshing his barley in the barn. And when he's done, he'll have a big meal. He'll drink some wine. And it's kind of a harvest celebration. He's going to spend the night in the barn. He's going to lay down next to those sacks of grain. So after, you just watch him, you hide in the shadows, don't let him see you. And after he eats his meal and drinks his wine, and when he's in good spirits, he's going to lie down next to those sacks of barley and go to sleep. And that's when you make your move. When he's asleep, you creep over, you lay down next to him. And when he wakes up, you'll know what to say. Yeah, this is all in the Bible, folks. And so Ruth does it. She gets her prettiest dress, puts on perfume, sneaks over to the barn, hides, watches Boaz thresh barley. She's thinking, man, that guy can thresh some barley. He gets it all in the sacks and all that, and the harvest is complete, and he has a meal, and he drinks his wine, and he's in good spirits, and he lies down in the barn, and he goes to sleep. Soon after midnight, Ruth came out of her hiding place, crept over very softly, tiptoed, and then just laid down right next to Boaz. Soon after midnight, Boaz wakes up, turns over. There's a woman there next to him. And he's startled. He said, who are you? And she said, I am Ruth. Now, it's dark, so we can't tell. So we don't know if a smile crept over Boaz's face or not. And then Ruth said this. Spread your wings over me, for you are a redeemer. See, remember, Boaz had said, may the Lord God bless you under whose wings, or it's also the word blanket, under whose blanket you have come for refuge. And now she lies down beside him. He wakes up. She says, he says, who are you? She says, I'm Ruth. Now, spread your wings or your blanket over me, for you are a redeemer. Just before dawn, Boaz sends Ruth home. He says, don't let anybody see you. Go home before it's light. But I'll make you this promise. I'm going to take care of everything before the day's done. So, bright and early, Boaz goes to the gates of the city, which is like the courthouse. It's where all the legal affairs are, legal and judicial affairs are addressed. And so he goes to the courthouse. And he finds the owner of the property, that is, the person who had foreclosed upon the property of Naomi's husband and forced them then to go seek work in Moab. He finds the owner of the property and says, I want to redeem it. I am a relative, I'm a cousin of Naomi's late husband, and I won't go into all the details, but according to the law of Israel, if a relative wanted to redeem land that had been seized by a creditor, the creditor had to sell it. Now, there would be the issue of negotiating the price and all that, but he still had to sell. And so Boaz finds the creditor and says, I'm a relative and I want to redeem it. All right. All right. But there's only one problem. There are always, you know, these technicalities and stuff. Why do you got to have lawyers and things like that? There actually was a closer relative, someone who was more closely related to Naomi's late husband. And sure enough, he shows up at the courthouse. And Boaz says, ah, just the man I'm looking for. I was wanting to talk to you. You know, Naomi has come back. Her husband died, but she's back. And I've decided as her relative that I want to redeem her property. I'm going to pay the creditor off, and her property is going to be added to my estate. But since you're actually more closely related to her late husband than I am, you have the first right of refusal. You can redeem it if you want. Are you interested? And the guy said, you know what? I think I will. I think I'll redeem that. I'll add that to my estate. And then Boaz says, of course, you know that means you have to marry the Moabite woman that came back with her and raise up children in her husband's name according to the law. And he said, oh, wait, that's a different story. That would kind of ruin my domestic bliss, if you know what I mean. He says, no, I'll sign off on it. You can have it. And so Boaz redeems the property, marries Ruth, and they live happily ever after. It's a love story with an epilogue. Seems as though Ruth got pregnant on the honeymoon. You can read the story yourself later on. They had a boy. They named him Obed. And Obed was destined to become the grandfather of David, King David, the one who would put Bethlehem on the map. So in other words, Ruth, a Moabite foreigner, was the great-grandmother of King David. They had broken the rules well. And Ruth is found in the New Testament. Because Ruth is one of only five women mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus. Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, Bathsheba, and Mary. All of these women endured some sort of scandal. Tamar was raped by her half-brother. Rahab was a Canaanite prostitute. Ruth was a Moabite, specifically excluded from the congregation of Israel. Bathsheba, you know that story, seduced by David. I think she had little choice in the matter. Got caught up in all of that. And Mary, well, the teenage unwed mother. Indeed, all of the women, five of them, mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus, Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, Bathsheba, and Mary, endured some kind of scandal, and all of them had their stories redeemed in Jesus. Amen. That's the epilogue. And now what? Well, now it's time for you to come here and eat some bread and dip your bread in the wine and believe that Jesus is spreading his wing over you to be your redeemer. What you're going to do is you're going to come to this table with the words of Ruth in your mouth. You're going to say, spread the wings of your love over me, for you are my Redeemer. Spread your wings of love over me, Jesus, for you are my Redeemer. And Jesus is going to spread his wings of love over you and redeem you. And everything's going to be all right. Amen? Amen. Stand with me.